Alpha team is flying around the forest zone, situated in Northwest Raccoon City, where we're searching for the helicopter of our compatriots, Bravo team, who disappeared during the middle
Chris,
of our mission.
You haven't found it?
No, I haven't found it yet.
Bizarre murder cases have recently occurred in Raccoon City. There are outlandish reports of families being attacked by a group of about 10 people. Victims were apparently eaten. Bravo team went to the hideout of the group and disappeared.
Look, Chris!
Every story has a beginning. Discover the origin of evil.
Why are you back here, Claire?
Your conspiracies weren't true when we were kids, and not true now.
We need to expose Umbrella.
Watch this.
I'm afraid, Claire. I'm afraid of what they're gonna do to this town. You see, Umbrella, they had an incident. I'm talking Chernobyl, if you know what I mean. People are getting sick. You gotta help us, Claire. Let the world know what's really going on.
We have to contain this.
Trying to get up that great big hill of hope.
Shall we go?
For a destination. Into a crisis of times when I'm lying in bed. Just to get it all out. What's in my head? And I am feeling...
What were Umbrella doing here?
This is where they're experimenting on him.
We should split up.
Down.
Do you have any experience with survival horror video games?
A little bit. So I do play video games. Recently, I've been playing one that is called Dying Light. It's like a zombie survival game. So yes, I do. I did play Resident Evil a little bit, not too much.
Which Resident Evil?
I don't remember which one. It is to me like, I like zombies because of you, but then I got zombied out. And on my video games itself, I like more like fantasy. I don't like more zombie first, you know, shooters and stuff like that. That's kind of more violent for my taste. I'm not too violent of a person. I like more fantasy. So I know that I did play one and I didn't was too much into it.
I can see you liking it because of the puzzle aspect of it, but that was more in the earlier games. And my understanding is that when they redid the games, they made them more intense and more action oriented. So I think that the moment for you to play Resident Evil games has passed, unfortunately.
Yes, indeed. And I think I remember when I was 13 years old. I remember that I stay over my aunt's house and my cousin was playing it and he was explaining to me about, oh yeah, you know, it is like all these puzzles and then you have to do all this. And he was a bit of a liar. Well, a bit more. He was a big time liar. And then at that time he was going to school for engineering. And I remember him telling me, and I remember this because at the time he told me, I have no clue what he was talking about. And then he was telling me, oh yeah, this game is so immersive. It's so complex that you have to solve integrals just to, you know, find the solution. And at that time, I was like, what the hell is an integral? And not until I went to school, it's like, oh, I know what an integral now is. But I know he was lying. I watched him play for a little bit and then I got bored because it got too violent. So
with me, of course, I've been a fan of zombies for much of my life. And I definitely had an interest when I first heard about Resident Evil. But I don't think I played it until Resident Evil 2. And I think what it was is either I bought it or my friends... Mac and Vic bought it, the brothers. And what we would do is they had got the strategy game. The strategy magazine, the book that they used to always sell. There's a whole industry of books explaining how to play the games. And so we all three of us would get together and we'd have the book for when we got stuck. And we just basically took turns playing it. And it was great because we were all pretty much equally involved in the game. And because we weren't watching another person play the game when we weren't actively playing ourselves, we were watching the person who was taking their turn playing the same character as us. We're all going through the same levels and trying to work out the same problems and getting scared when jump scares and stuff would happen, that we were just all really invested in it. It's one of the best experiences I've had with gaming in my life. Because I love Resident Evil so much, not only did I, if I didn't already own my own copy, I bought my own copy. And then I went backwards and I bought the first Resident Evil. And I like that fairly well, but not as good as Resident Evil 2. In fact, it's still considered the best of all the games made because you had two discs, and on one disc you would play as Claire Redfield, and on the other disc you'd play as Leon S. Kennedy. And depending on which disc you started first and what you did while you're playing the game as one character would impact the second disc play, where you're doing the same, we're doing it as another character. So if some person got a healing potion in this section, then you didn't have that one and you had to go find something else for yourself. Mm-hmm. So you were potentially robbing from yourself or disadvantaging yourself depending on how you played a particular game. So very involving, lots of replay value. They had little side games, and you could unlock a thing called Hunk's Quest, I think it was called, where you're playing one of the evil Umbrella stormtroopers and they're having to make their way through a gauntlet in a short span of time. Rooms, they were just absolutely filled with zombies. In the games, you didn't typically have a lot of instances where you'd just be overwhelmed by huge numbers of zombies. It would usually be an accumulative thing. But with Hunk's Run, you would actually walk in a room and there'd be nothing but zombies and you'd be just overwhelmed. Great gameplay. The first game I liked fine, but it wasn't as into the characters. And it was just the first version, so it wasn't as well developed. So yeah, I have a great affection for the Resident Evil games and ended up playing them up through like the fourth or fifth game. And then I pretty much got out of video gaming in general.
How many Resident Evil games are there?
Well, I was curious, so I looked at a list of the top Resident Evil games and they showed like a top 10. And I realized pretty quickly that they was only doing the top 10. There were more than 10. So probably more in the realm of like 15 to 20 games total since 1996, I believe it was. Because my understanding is that they celebrated the 25th anniversary of the games this year, but I'm not sure if they're talking about the American version, Resident Evil, or the original Japanese version called Biohazard. And also the fact that I didn't start playing the games until Resident Evil 2. I'm not so much concerned about meeting the 25th anniversary criteria because I wasn't there for the actual anniversary, the actual launch of the game. Now, I'm also a fan of the movie series, and I know you've seen at least some of those movies, but you were telling me you'd only actually seen one in the theater.
So I only remember seeing, I think I saw or half saw it, one or two. In the movies, I do remember one. It was one of the latest ones. I think the one is that they were in Tokyo. The one that with the main girl. I don't even remember the name of the girl.
We're in the square, the famous Japanese square that we visited in the past.
Yeah, the one that is a lot of people, the crossing. Mm-hmm. There was just like this massive amount of people. Yeah, so we went there. Yeah. And that's the only one. And the only thing that I remember is that in a train. But as you explained to me after, is like saying that all the Resident Evils have trains. So it's not much in. And the only thing that I remember aside from the crossing, the train, it was Michelle Rodriguez, because I really like that actress. But she appeared in a number of them too. So yeah. It's not that.
I'm pretty confident that the one you saw was 5, because we would have seen it theatrically. We would have seen it in 3D. And that was the one that was sort of like the recap, where because of circumstances within that particular movie, they're showing you sequences from the other movies and also these sort of what if scenarios of how things might have gone differently. And it was just sort of an odd entry. But I thought that you'd at least gone back to seeing the first one with me, like watching it on DVD or on cable or something.
Maybe I didn't pay too much attention because those are not my kind of movies. I can watch zombie movies, but you know, zombies with too much violence and stuff, and it's not like Aliens that is, you know, it has more story to it. Although the Resident Evils, I'm guessing they have story, but
not so much.
Not really.
No, not so much.
So it's just like a hot chick running with weapons and action and all that zombie scares, like boo, I'm here, all of them. So yeah, so that's not kind of my kind of movie. It's like fast pacing, fast moving, pow, 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 boom, boom, oh, train, the dogs. Oh, I did remember the dogs as well.
Yeah, the dogs are in most of the movies too. So yes. not really.
Exactly. So it is just like the same things over. So that's why I don't remember which movie I saw, because they all seem to be the same movie. And maybe if I saw the first one or the second one, I'm confusing to the one that I saw in the movie theater, because they all look the same. Yeah. You know,
And again, there are sequences in 5 that are replicating sequences from the previous movies.
And if you tell me what is the plot of the movie, it's like I'm like the basic of the movies I know, that is this umbrella corporation that tried to do experiments, and that's it. Like, mm-hmm. seriously, because it's like into the entire movies, do they go into deep detail on what is happening? Or once again, it's just action zombies, a hot chick running and doing this acrobatic shit.
Mostly that. I mean, there is a story, but it's so convoluted and confused and unnecessary, you know, that nobody's really overly concerned about it. So, and that's actually one of the things that hurt the last one, was that they were trying to resolve all the mysteries. And it's like the series was never really that much into resolving all the mysteries. It's really about action set pieces and such.
Exactly. So that's not my kind of movie at all. So that's why I don't remember any of the movie. So, and then when you mentioned that you want to see this one and on the movie theater, on this new one, I'm just like, okay, well, I guess if there is popcorn, although we're in the pandemic, therefore I'm not freely eating popcorn. And that's why we end up going in the middle of the night, you know, when there's not that many people, for which I was grateful for that, because I was able to eat a popcorn.
Well, that, and because it was somewhat last minute, you know, I was watching this one screening, and up to us leaving, there was literally no one else in the theater. I was hoping we were going to have another Neon Demon experience where we literally would be the only ones there. But by the time it was all said and done, there was probably something along the lines of a half dozen of us, roughly.
All spread out.
Yeah. So because it was a rush job, I ended up eating in the theater itself, which, not brilliant. That was a circumstance. The food was actually decent, given, you know, burgers and hot dogs.
Except for the after, during the night.
Well, I see, I'm already feeling kind of under the weather to begin with. And of course, as soon as I was done eating, I made sure to put the mask on because there were some people coughing in there.
Yes, I did. When I heard that, I stopped eating the popcorn and I put my mask on. But I did was noticing the people around it, and they were kind of far away from us.
Right.
So I think the seats that you chose, I was grateful, because it was people all spread. It was like not even near, like 20 feet, you know, they were kind of 20 feet away from us.
Yeah. It's a situation where I'm still not entirely comfortable going to movie theaters, period. And certainly not crowded ones, and certainly not crowded ones where I'm going to be eating. So I'm real particular about the circumstances of that. And thankfully, it still worked out reasonably well, fingers mm-hmm. crossed. The irony of getting sick from a movie about biological weapons and stuff, too strong, too great. You know, yeah. Didn't make me happy. Typically, I'll see the movies with my guys because we'd seen all the movies. But because this is a reboot, it's kind of a fresh start. And the simple fact is that I'm confident that the guys don't care about these movies anymore and they don't want to watch them anymore.
I think the one that we went to see in the movie theater in the past, I think we went with your friends.
Okay.
I think we went with Mac and Victor.
Okay, maybe so. But I didn't feel like they probably wanted to deal with this anymore. And I still have enough affection for Resident Evil movies that I was game to go ahead and check this one out. And even though, to my chagrin, only in theaters, because I'd been perfectly happy to have seen this at home. The fact is, I've seen every Resident Evil movie in the movie theater, every live action movie I specify. They've done a number of CGI movies, and I've only seen some of those because the ones I did see were lousy. But I kind of wanted to keep up the streak too. So for this series, I went ahead and I took the shot. So do you want to tell folks a little bit about what Resident Evil Welcome to Raccoon City is about?
The one that we just went to.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so me being fresh new, I didn't know anything about the movie itself, this new movie. I thought it was going to be a continuation, another Mila Jovovich.
Another installment, yeah.
Yeah, so, and I know that you have really the hots for Mila. I mean, she's a pretty woman, so yeah, very, very fit. So I thought it was just going to be her, and my hope is like, well, maybe it's going to be Michelle Rodriguez in there. Mm-hmm. So I went in with absolutely zero knowledge of it. And I think on the way to the movie theater, I did ask you if Mila was going to be in there. And then you're like, no, it's like all brand new people. Okay, so I thought it's going to be a continuation or like afterwards or a prequel. I have no clue, right? So we go into the movie theater. And of course, the trailer was really good because my boy Ethan Hawke was in the new one, the Black Telephone, I think it's called.
Yeah, the same people who did Sinister, which if you haven't seen, is one of the best horror movies of the 21st century.
Yes.
So of course, we don't expect this to be that, but it still looked pretty good. Looked pretty solid. I'm sure we'll see that one probably theatrically, you think?
Oh, yes. I mean, it's Ethan Hawke. Come on.
Well, it's not like we see everything Ethan Hawke, but Ethan Hawke in the right movie, you'll want to see.
Yes. And then we also saw the trailer Morbius.
Yeah, The Living Vampire, which is funny because I actually tried to get you to watch that because I thought the soundtrack selection would...
but the thing is that I just don't like whenever you make me watch stuff on command. You know, it's like, I have to feel it, see it. If you just go like, no, come and see it, I just have this, you know, reaction of like, no, I'm not going to see it. I don't want to see it now. So, yeah, so I was watching did it. It's actually a pretty good trailer. And I have a mixed feelings about Jared Leto. But the thing that the trailer warned me is like the actual song that they were playing, People Are Strange from The Doors.
So, it was The Doors version too, wasn't it?
Okay. I think so. I mean, it was kind of because they were slower. Mm-hmm. It's not the original, the normal, the one that sings out in the album. It's all
chopped and screwed or whatever. Yeah.
But yeah, but it's kind of slow, very slow moving. And it's one of my favorite songs. So I was like, oh, this is actually pretty good. But anyhow, the movie.
Well, it just gets me because it famously, that song was used in the Lost Boys soundtrack. I think it might have even been in the trailer, but it was not the Doors version. It was, I think, Psychedelic Furs or Love Spit Love, somebody like that.
I thought it was Jim Morrison.
It sounded it. If not, that they were aiming to sound like Jim.
They were trying, but...
I'm known for liking comic books and superheroes and stuff, but I'm also a big horror fan. It's been an itch I've been wanting to scratch recently, and even though I don't have high hopes for Morbius, the combination of superheroes and horror has got my interest enough that where I want to check that one out as well. Because I'm really sick of Marvel product at this point.
Me too.
And any variation on that where it's still tying into the universe, but it's giving us a different take, a different angle, that helps to keep my interest up.
Yes, and I am glad that Jared Leto is not playing that fucking Joker with his grill. Ugh, disgusting.
Yeah, he's got a redemption arc hopefully coming, because if not, then that's going to be a real drag. I hated his Joker.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a love and hate with him.
Jordan Catalano, I know.
I mean, yeah, I love Jordan Catalano, and in some of the other movies, I really like it. I mean, come on, it's such a pretty guy. But I know he's a little bit out there, you know, so it is kind of like a love and hate kind of situation. Anyhow, so we go into the movie. I don't absolutely nothing know about this movie. Don't know what the time frame. I don't know absolutely nothing. And the first thing they show, it was 1998. Wait, it was 1998 when the kids were in the orphanage?
No,
or that was 1998 when they were adults?
The movie is set in 1998. There's a flashback.
I think one of the first scenes were with the kids, right?
Yeah, I want to say it opens with the kids at the orphanage. And I think that's why they're not telling you the date up front, if I remember correctly. Because I don't remember they remember saying that it's 1980-something or 1990, early certain 90s. I don't think we got a date until they actually start the proper narrative. So this is just like a cold flashback where I think you're supposed to be disoriented.
Yeah. So to me,
I want to say that material isn't from the games. If it is from the games, I want to say it must be later in the series after I had stopped playing them.
So yeah. So I don't know anything about. So I for me being disoriented didn't tell me anything because I don't know anything. So the first thing that they show, it was this two boy and a girl, probably like around, you know, 10, 11 or something like that. They were all sleeping, and apparently the girl's sneaking, you know, to be with the boy, their brother and sister. And it started good, actually. You know, it grabbed my attention. So we went late. I was already sleepy. And you know me, I can sleep through noise and bang bangs and stuff like that. So I thought that I was going to just fall asleep. But it caught my attention because the girl was seeing this weird figure in the corner. And it just looked so scary enough that I was just like, huh, that's interesting. And then it was just the girl just kind of go like, is somebody there? And the boy is like, no, you dreamed it, you know, just you know, go back to sleep and stuff.
I don't remember if you mentioned it or not, but this is at an orphanage, a city orphanage.
Yeah.
And they're just like, it's like a hospital wing sort of kind of, or like a typical movie orphanage where it's a bunch of beds next to each other. I think bunk beds weren't
bunk beds, yeah.
Yeah, so it's just like rows and rows of kids, and so you only got this one little girl in this dark room seeing this shadowy figure visiting her.
They're all sleeping, yeah. And so she's the one who sees it, and the brother is like, no, it's nobody there. But the girl gets up a bit when the...
Well, I think that this has happened before too.
Yes,
and that's part of why the brother's dismissive about it.
It's like the woman showed up again, or the woman is here. So the brother is like, yeah, you're just dreaming it. You're not seeing anything. So like you say, it seems that has already happened in the past. So then they go into this cut scene, and then they go into the next one where she goes into this, I guess it's like a toy room or something for the orphanage, where there's a tent, and then she's walking very slowly. And I like that they don't put like this massive tense music like I hate on horror movies when they go like,
yes, it's time for you to be scared.
Yeah, like
they did do like a sing-song lullaby thing at parts, but I think in that part they were letting the silence work for the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Another thing that I kind of dropped my attention to is that everything was so subtle. Not jumps. It was, and then they were taking a long time for each scene for the girl to walk into like this kind of sort of tent, and then she was just walking slow, and there was not like rush or anything like violence, boo, bah, you know, like the latest It movie, you know. Mm-hmm. It was more like letting me enjoy like the suspense on what is gonna be inside that tent. And so she opens it, and it sees the like this mysterious woman having a mask, but they didn't show too much of her.
Well, the mask appears to be made out of somebody else's face.
Yeah, and then it has like a double face, so it was like half of the face, the woman's face, in the open, but then it's like the mask was showing like the other face was facing on the peripheral of this face, right, of the head. So, but they didn't go into too much detail, so you just saw the woman. And then at that time, the director, I guess, of the orphanage came in. Oh, what are you doing here? And then the brother showed up in the middle, and then they're just saying like, oh no, she's just sleepwalking, you know, since her parents die. And you know, the brother trying to protect the little sister. And the director is like, oh, okay, good, then you guys can go. And then on the next scene is then when they went to sleep, and I think it was on the same night, right? It was like at the same night. And the director is like, yeah, we're just gonna take you to some place, you're being adopted. And the girl is like, what about my brother? Oh, he will come too, blah blah blah. And the girl is just like kind of afraid, and that's what the cut scene, you know, that's when the, and then they show like this outside of the orphanage, you know, it says Umbrella Orphanage or Raccoon
something
Orphanage,
like that. Raccoon City or Orphanage, maybe,
yeah,
you know.
Or something.
And
like that.
I don't know if it was the letters, the lighting, or what, but they appeared to have like a rainbow of colors throughout the letters.
Yes,
but
it did have
because it was ominously lit. It just made it more creepy than it did, you know, kid friendly.
Yes, it did have colors letters, because whenever they came back later on in the movie, they show the same coloring afterwards. So yeah, so that was,
well, you have a nice contrast because you've got out this burnt out industrial town and this one little section that's colorful, but the colors are against like fading chip paint and, you know, this rough looking exterior. So it's like, even in trying to make things nice, it just added more of a creepy flair to
mm-hmm.
it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a storyline they play with throughout the movie, but it doesn't really pay off. But what they make it clear is that the little girl is suspicious of the orphanage and the director specifically, that she seemed like she almost had something bad happen to her, but she doesn't. And then at some point later on, she does run away, but it seems like she runs away when she's older. So it's
they didn't get into too much detail at all.
Yeah, you wonder if maybe they were saving it for a sequel or something, but it never really felt resolved.
No, it was afterwards. They actually mentioned afterwards, because that was a cut scene where she, when they were taking her outside the room where they were sleeping, right? That you're gonna get adopted and later on your brother is gonna come along. She seemed very, very suspicious, but that was the cut, you know, so you don't know what's gonna happen to this girl. And then the next scene, it was the scene, annoying scene with the cops, you know, in the diner, or it was the girl in the truck.
I want to say the truck first.
It was a truck first. Okay, so yeah.
So this is where we're introduced to Claire Redfield, who is one of the protagonists of the second game, and she was a little girl grown up. She's played by Kaya Scodelario, who I think is best known for being in the Maze Runner movies. I wasn't familiar with her before this movie, so it was one of the things that gave me some apprehension going in, that the majority of this cast I was not familiar with.
That it wasn't Mila.
Yeah. I don't have that Mila safety net where it's like, at least I'm going to get Mila in this movie.
Yeah, so they is showing her being on a truck.
Yeah, big rig with a trucker who's handsy with her.
Yeah, and then the thing is that I hate seeing people eat.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, especially when they eat and sexually harass at the same time.
And then they eat and talk.
And also not looking at the road while they're driving in the rain on a back road.
I was like, to me, that's kind of like a most horrific thing I saw in the whole movie. I'm just kidding. No, but it was me. I just closed my eyes and I'm just like, okay, dude, stop fucking chewing your burger and sexually harass this girl, you know. But anyhow, so they were just, you know, going into like, oh, so yeah, kind of sexual harassing her, and then
why do you want to stay? Don't stay in Raccoon City. Stay on the road with me, baby, and that kind of bullshit.
Yeah, and then
that's a shithole town. Everybody's getting out of there now.
Kind of rolling her eyes, kind of going like, oh, typical fucking guys, you know, horny guys, assholes, gross, disgusting. Anyhow, so and then when they were going into this whole thing, when he put his hand on her tie and she was like, careful, you know, screaming. And then it was this body just walking in the middle of the road, because it was, they were not in the city. They were like in a highway.
Right.
Like
they're in the woods. They're out there in the wooded road. And the person is a woman dressed in what appears to be a hospital gown.
Yes.
So you get the sense that maybe there's an asylum or something that she might be an escapee from or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they end up hitting her. And of course they got out and the guy start freaking out, like crying, baby, oh my God, oh my God. You know, and the girl is like, oh, come on.
Well, she's trying to see if she can actually help her. If there's, you know.
Given
all the blood all over the grill, I don't think she was going to be able to help her any, but she's trying at least.
But at least she's like keeping the calm, not like this fucking, you know, oh my God, oh, you know, stuff like that. Anyhow, so yeah, so, and while they were arguing and stuff like that, the dog, for which it has to be a, what is it?
Doberman.
A Doberman, yeah. It's like, when I saw that dog in the trailer, like, oh, there you go. That's the dog. They always have to have one of those dogs. Mm-hmm. The dog started barking and he got out of the truck. And they, when they looked to see where the dog has been to, the lady was gone. You know, when they were arguing, the lady just got up and just kept walking.
Yeah. Well, they didn't see the body just disappeared.
No, I think they show the woman moving.
They know what it is. Later on, before she gets back into the truck, Claire looks out into the woods and she sees the lady out there in the woods looking back at her.
I do remember her moving, actually getting up and
well, I think it was one of those instances where they weren't looking and she did the zombie move where all of a sudden she's like reanimating, but I don't think they saw her do that.
Okay.
And then the next day she's gone.
They didn't saw her, but we did see that. So she's gone and they're like, well, I guess it's just gonna be that bad if she's gone. And Claire is like, well, we need to go check it out. The guy is like, no, I'm good. But at that time, the dog started licking the blood of the woman who got hit. Out of the pavement. So I was just like, oh, there you go. You know, so at that point I was already like, okay, typical movie, that sounds good, not too impressed. So I was starting like, well, maybe I'm going to fall asleep in this movie. They finally get into the next scene where the cops, they were in the diner.
Yeah, it's a little bit tricky because they closely associate the local Raccoon City Police Department with the STARS, and the STARS is a SWAT team that's specific to Umbrella. Like, they, if I recall correctly, they work specifically with Umbrella, or they're financed by Umbrella through the Raccoon PD. But there was always this sort of partition between the STARS, these elite guys, and the regular cop. And to some degree, they demonstrate that by having these cops in a diner, and it's a small enough town where it's probably the only diner. And there's a rookie cop who's asleep at the bar, and they're like putting ketchup containers on his head and talking about who can shoot the ketchup off the guy. And the girl they're going to try to do the shooting is actually about ready to whip out her gun. And they're like, no, what are you, psycho? Shoot him with a little rubber gun, with the rubber arrow, you know, the suction cup gun. Yeah. So it's a whole thing with that that's not really worth getting into, because that's where I started to get kind of worried, because all the cops were really obnoxious and it was starting to feel like, you know, action movie bullshit.
So that, to me, with the truck driver, it started really good in the orphanage, because they had like that nice suspense, that nice of, you know, taking your time to get you there, to get you that estate. And then they go into the trucker that it was pretty obvious, pretty lame. And then it goes into this diner. And like you say, it was pretty obnoxious fucking guys. You know, I'll pay you $20. You cannot do that. You know, and then the guys just start making fun of the rookie. And it's just like this, you know, toxic male cops, I guess. I don't know, you know. So I was getting kind of annoyed about that. It's like, okay, well, I'm going to sleep after all. So that's one of the things that also bothered me a little bit, because I'm like, okay, so this guy's, at first I didn't know they were cops, the ones in the diner.
Yeah, they're not in uniform or anything.
They were in civilian clothes.
They have a paramilitary thing going on too. That's why the stars are different. Ugh. So they're not really cops.
But I mean, nowadays, I mean, it's like at that time, I think at that point they established it was 1998.
Yeah.
But it's like living into there now, how many times they want to be all that military and they dress like that just to be vigilantes.
Mm-hmm. Like militia or something.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's what I was just like, okay, that fucking toxic attitude, you know. So I thought there was this guy's, I thought there were civilians just wannabe militia, you know. Right. So that's why I start rolling my eyes on that. And then you have this newbie cop that at first is like, is he a cop? Because he looks like a security from a mall or something. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't sure. Then there's two other cops showed up dressed entirely different from the newbie. So at first it's like, okay, so what's going on? Is he the security? The newbie the security? This guy's are the cop, and this guy's are just like friends from the town. So I started trying, and then when I realized, no, they're all cops, and I'm like, what the fuck? How many cops it has this tiny little town, dude? You know, and that's just a night shift.
I don't know how small the town is supposed to be. I want to say it's more like a Detroit situation where it's just like run down and rough, but maybe at one point was a major place. Or it might just be because between the games and the other movies have built up Raccoon City, because it's a pretty sizable metropolitan area in the games. And in particular, when you're playing the games and you're having to go like block to block survival, you get a sense of it being a large city. So here they play it more like it's in the, like redneck, you know, in the deep woods and
a
shit.
A small town,
but
yeah.
It's still a decent
well,
looking
but they
town.
Didn't show,
it's hard to tell.
So it didn't make any logic. If it's a large, decent city, then I was gonna say, okay, so this is little. I always thought it was a small town.
Yeah, I want to say it's like a Detroit or
call it like a million people. I don't
yeah,
know.
Yeah, something like that.
Oh, that's way too. Okay, well, anyhow, but it just makes sense now a little bit, because at first, like, I thought it was a small town, and then you have like all these people with a helicopter, and then like this elite SWAT team plus the cop plus this newbie that I don't know if it's a security or if an actual cop that is dressed different from this other people.
You could make the case that there might be that heavy of an authoritative presence because you've got a corrupt pharmaceutical chemical company based there.
Yeah, but I didn't know that.
Right, okay.
So this is me going into a movie that...
You're confused. They're not explaining it very well to
exactly.
you.
Exactly. Okay. So I don't know. I always, until you explained to me about the extent of the city, I always thought it was a small town from that movie.
Yeah.
Right? So at first it's like, okay, well, their attitudes, they're different. A lot of cops and a lot of in one little diner. And it's just to me, I was like, okay, well, this is going to be a bad movie.
Well, and you'd have the bit too where the waitress start crying blood.
Well, but then that was afterwards. Right? That was with the newbie, right? Yeah. After they all left, you know, let's go because we go see the chief. You know, that fucking macho attitude. And then the newbie was a good looking guy. They start talking to the
waitress.
Yeah. And then that was like, that's when I started making good again because of those little details, because they're talking like, you know,
normal people.
Yeah. No, don't worry. And don't hit on the girl because it's like the big guys, you know, blah, blah. So don't get yourself in trouble. And then she just out of the blue started like bleeding from the eye, but from the, what do you call this? Like little corner here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Where the tears come out, you know, start bleeding, but it looks so freaky. And the guy was just like, is something wrong with your eye? And then just the way she just wiped it out, like, oh no, I've just been doing it for the last couple of weeks. But you can sense that something was off with this lady.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, okay, well, that was interesting.
Well, something they established throughout the movie is that this town lived and ultimately died on the money the Umbrella brought to them. And so there's this sense of denial. No, there's nothing wrong. Everything's great. Umbrella's a great corporation. They take care of us. And so these people aren't getting checked out by the doctors like supposed to, and they're just in denial, it seems like.
Well, no, because also there was when the SWAT team or the lead group was there, the tall guy was saying something about, oh yeah, wipe down this map, you know, let's leave this town, who cares, just close down the whole town. And the waitress is like, oh come on, don't mess with my town. Don't
yeah, I grew
mess
up
Roku.
Here, you know, this is my town. Yeah.
Yeah, so anyhow, so that was the end of that scene, for which I thought that last part with the blood, the way it is that they didn't like, oh my god, blood is coming out of your ear,
right?
You know, like just those action movies that they always want to exaggerate the reactions of everything, for which I fucking hate. So just the fact that the newbie guy told the waitress like, oh, there is blood coming out, and you just see like this small moving with the lady just touching it, and oh yeah, it's been doing it for the last 2 weeks, you know, like that normal talk instead of just, you know, that kind of brought me back into the movie. So I'm like, oh okay, well, I don't know. With the orphanage was good. And now this little scene kind of saved the entire scene of those assholes in the diner. So next scene, it was like when the truck driver was dropping off Claire, that's her name?
Yeah.
Claire, into this small house. And she just keep knocking. It's like, hey, what was the name of the brother? I don't remember.
Chris is the brother. And when nobody answers, which is nice, and this is clearly, well, they give you timestamps. So I want to say this is probably like, say, 9-ish or 10-ish at night.
Mm-hmm.
So it would make sense that he'd be up and about at that point in time. But when he's not, he uses a knife rake in. And, you know, he's a little freaked out when he comes downstairs to see who's, you know, broken into his house.
For that kind of annoyed me, because I'm sorry, if you're a cop and you're already getting ready to go to your shift and you don't hear people actually knocking in multiple windows and multiple doors.
Yeah.
For that little house, I can understand if it's like a large mansion or something. But that little tiny house, especially in 1998, when they didn't have that very good soundproof, you know, situation. And I was like, oh, come on, you cannot hear this?
Well, I think they were setting up that he was in the shower, if I remember correctly.
Okay, well, that makes sense. I probably totally missed that.
He's impressed that she was able to pick a deadbolt with a knife like that, mm-hmm. and is concerned about what has she been getting up to since she ran away. They haven't been talking, and I don't know if they
did talk after she ran away from the orphanage.
Very little, though.
Because he said that the last time he saw her, it was 5 years. Mm-hmm. And now she probably was, I don't know, like he early figured, 20s?
She's back in town. And no, I mean, the actors in this movie are, because I checked, I was curious, the majority of the actors are right at 28 to 32. They're all around the same age group. So no, they're not kids anymore. And I don't think they're playing kids either.
Okay, so the actual characters are around the late 20s, early 30s?
Well, in the games, I would say probably closer to early to mid 20s. The actors are in their late 20s, early 30s.
Yeah, but you have a Save Like the Bell, Save of the Bell, sure, and Grease.
I'll give you that. So let's say that they're in their early 20s, the characters are.
To me, they look like the brother was mid-20s, maybe because I'm old now. I see mm-hmm. everybody like a little kid.
Yeah.
But to me, the brother was like maybe 28, 27, you know, 29. The girl, well,
he's also a naive true believer in the Umbrella Corporation. He grew up in their orphanage system. He was quote-unquote adopted by the director of the orphanage, William Birkin. He joined their cop squad. He's part of the elite squad. So he's still 100% Team Umbrella and has never appreciated Claire's skepticism and issues with authority and everything else because he literally is the authority.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
probably a good time to point out, too, the actor playing Chris Redfield is Robbie Amell. You might remember him from The Duff. Do you remember that movie?
So that was him. Yeah. Okay, I was trying the entire movie, trying to feel like, where did I see this guy before?
Yeah.
Okay.
And then comic book fans would know him from the first season or early seasons of The Flash when he was playing Firestorm, okay. Roy Raymond or Ronnie Raymond, sorry. And, just kind of your typical handsome bohunk type of guy. And for me, that's probably the best casting of the movie because the Chris Redfield of the game was just this big, football type guy. So it seemed like a good match between the two of them.
Yeah. So they go into this, they talking about, oh yeah, I haven't seen you for 5 years. You know, you've been, since you ran away, I haven't spoken to you in 5 years. And then she started talking about like the reason why she came back. Oh, the brother asked him, why are you back? And sister Claire was telling him because there is something is about to happen or something is good. Like something was weird with Raccoon City and she wanted to make sure that,
one thing they end up revealing, and I don't know, I think she shows him the tape early on, but basically she has an informant within Raccoon City, within the Umbrella Corporation, that's talking about how these guys are basically not only pulling up out of the town, but they're either intentionally dumping or having leaks that's going to literally kill the town, that this guy's had exposure, which doesn't entirely make sense because I thought he was with Umbrella, but maybe it's a situation where he was an observer or a journalist or something. But basically, he's been keeping her apprised through the internet of what's been happening in Raccoon City. And so she's back to try to either deal with it or get her brother out or whatever. I never find it very clear why she comes back. And to me, I would think that the ideal thing would be to stay the fuck away. And the only thing that makes sense to me is that she's there to try to get her brother out.
Well, yeah, she was trying to convince the brother.
And he won't listen.
Yeah, of course. But one of the things that a little bit of 1998 humor when Claire is like, yeah, I was talking to this guy in chat room. And the brother's like, what is a chat room?
And the kids of 2021 are also like, what's a chat room?
Yeah, no kidding.
Very narrow window of relevancy there. And that's something I do have to say, too. I really appreciated all the nods toward period elements. It can get downright fetishistic at times, but they have a number of songs from the time period. They have, a guy playing Snake on his Nokia phone. They've got all these different references and stuff. They clearly made an effort to set the movie in roughly the same time span as the games, and that was appreciated. It still feels a little early for 90s nostalgia, but my understanding is that it's already a thing, and the movie definitely plays to that.
Almost 20, 22, 23 years.
Roughly 25 years, given that that's when the game came out. Yeah.
I know. So, and what it was funny to me too, the hilariousness of it is like they were talking about the chat rooms, right? That she's talking to this guy during the chat room, and then she pulls out of this VHS cassette and start playing like this video recording of the guy explaining what is going on with Raccoon City about the leaks, about injecting something into the water.
I'm assuming he mailed that to her. I don't think that
I don't know.
That.
That's what I think understood, that she actually got better recorder with this guy. And the entire time I'm just thinking, how do you end up actually recording back then on a VHS? I'm trying to figure it out.
Given how long it took you to stream the trailer for The Phantom Menace, I can definitely see where you couldn't get like a 3 minutes of exposition.
I seriously didn't have YouTube back then. I was distracted more about trying to figure out how did this guy manage to actually record during the chat room and put it on a VHS.
The entire time
I am actually trying to like remembering back in the day what technology was back in the day, if it was possible or not. That I almost missed half the conversation that he was having about the leak and everything because of that little.
She pulled the VHS tape out of a manila envelope. So I guarantee you that he mailed her the tape.
I hope that was the case, but that's what I didn't get. Anywho,
I don't want to dwell on the minutiae because we're kind of going like literal like scene by scene with the movie. The short version is that, as with the video games, and this is where they start to more properly adapt the video games.
Just let me finish this one little thing, because the rest of it was just action, pum 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 pum, that I don't care.
Okay.
And another thing that caught my attention is when the Clarice was trying to get into the brother's house, you know, trying to call him and stuff like that. She looked over at the next house and there was this guy, this little kid with this hair almost fall down, like he had some
alopecia,
kind of cancer.
Yeah.
And then he's just like looking like all pale and everything, and he just waved, and then she waved back, and then she looked at the other window. No. and the mom kind of dragged the kid out. So that scene was like really good. It was scary enough that it was just like fantastic. And that was another scene that I like, when the brother left, right? You know, kind of like, oh, you put yourself together, and if you leave, you just lock behind, blah, blah. Oh no, that's when the sirens start going. I like that part too a lot. Mm-hmm. When the sirens start going into the whole town.
The emergency alarm throughout the town.
Imagine if you actually inside the house, like we're here right now, and that is start coming out of nowhere, I'll be petrified.
Yeah.
So that was another little touch that I really like a lot.
Well, especially we live in a plant town, and so I'm sure there are houses nearer to the plants that have experiences like that.
It does. Like if there's something going on, there is actually an emergency alarm system that blasts like every month or so to just kind of let people know about the plants. If something is going on, they will. So, and that's what it caught me, like, okay, that was kind of like really freaky, right? And then the Claire was going inside the house, and then the mom was just there, like the mom that I was talking about with the little boy, in the same way, like her hair is almost falling down, pale.
What's weird too is they have a number of gingers. I almost think they're leaning into the whole South Park gingers have no souls thing. They're all red toned hair as well.
Yeah, so and then it's just like she just showed up, and what is she wrote on the door with like the blood?
Itchy Tasty, which is right out of one of the games.
Okay, well, I didn't know that, but that was like really freaky because I'm trying to read.
Well, she wrote
it
in blood on the windscreen, the screen door.
So and I was trying to like read it backwards, and then they just like, and just her standing there without doing absolutely nothing. That was like really creepy to me, and I love scary movies. And then she looked, and there was the little boy under the table, and he was just doing something about like you're in danger or something is gonna happen.
I think she goes up to him and says something like, do you need a doctor? And he's like, you need a doctor.
Or something like that was so freaking. Mm-hmm. And the thing that caught me the most is that they actually took a time to slow get into that sense of like, holy shit. And if you remember, I actually squeezed your hand so hard throughout the movie. When this woman started breaking into the glass, and it's like, I was like, oh shit, because it was so scary. I was thinking about the boy coming out too.
Right.
So that one of the things was like, okay, well, I guess I'm not going to be able to sleep in this movie because I'm actually enjoying the slowness of it. It is not just like, bam, bam, boom, boom, bam, It was more like very slow silence, very like subtle music on the background, just like a decent scary movie. So, yeah,
and that was one of the things that was so revolutionary about the original Resident Evil games, and something they got away from, unfortunately, which is part of the reason why I got away from the games, was that you would definitely have scares from things leaping at you and noises and things, but also you'd have those quiet moments where you're doing research and you're finding somebody's diary and you're reading through it and you're seeing somebody's been bitten and you know what that means and you're seeing their slow mental deterioration. information as they're trying to write in the diary, and it's becoming more and more incomprehensible. And I think that's where the line itchy tasty comes from. Mood, such a hallmark of those games. And I know there are other games that did similar things, but either the balance wasn't right or it just wasn't what I was exposed to, because this is the one that made the big explosion. Like, I would honestly say, because I think the end of the zombies cultural relevance prior to Resident Evil was, say, 1984's Return of the Living Dead. They did make multiple sequels and they did do other movies in that time period, but really the heyday of the zombies was the 70s, and I think it kind of crested in the 80s, and there was this long period where they just weren't in, and where even something as seminal as Day of the Dead by George Romero was a bomb. It took Resident Evil to start rebuilding zombies as the franchise they had become, while there were definitely other vectors in making zombies the big thing in the 2000s.
But the thing is,
it really begins with Resident Evil in 96, I would say.
But the thing is about you say, to me, I just still don't see them as full-blown zombies. I don't know why. You know, it's like, for example, the movie Wreck.
Mm-hmm.
Magnificent movie. But you can see more or less that they're zombies too, but there is like not the typical zombie, oh, I'm gonna eat your brains. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. So that's what I never seen Resident Evil. I know they're zombie-like and they're zombies, but it's just more like sinister, more something beyond that. I don't know.
They're more classically they're like zombies in the earlier movies.
They're not like Walking Dead zombies or just like those George Romero zombies, I guess. You know, they're more something happened, and I don't know. It is hard to explain.
Yeah.
But anyhow, so that's why I like about some of these scenes, that they just took their time to kind of go into that pace to kind of give you information, not just by screaming at you or just, dude, come on, dude. Oh, game over, man. Sorry. but it's more like it kind of gives you, like you say, the diary and these little scenes.
Yeah. Okay, and that's something they had trouble with in the Paul W.S. Anderson movies, is they were just too action-oriented.
Yep.
And so even though you'd have gore and you'd have monsters, it was always the thing that you were going to shoot your gun at, as opposed to something that caused any kind of fear response.
And this one, it wasn't too much gore,
yeah,
for which it was funny.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, but it wasn't too much.
It was used well.
Yes. Yeah. It was enough for me. It was enough of everything.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I think is important is that they keep it grounded. And so when you see something gross or monstrous, it's contrasted against the way things ought to be. You know, like you said with the waitress earlier, is the people are having measured, correct responses because they're still in a real world, a normal world. This isn't like the post-zombie apocalypse where people are used to shooting at each other and scavenging for food and all that kind of shit. We're still in a civilization. You know, this is still a society that we live in. And they're acting like that. And so you've got that ambiguity about how am I supposed to respond to these things. This isn't a zombie that's smashing through a window. This is a sick woman who's having some kind of a mental breakdown. And so it's going to change how you respond to
brain.
It.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and that's what I'm saying. It's not like a typical zombie that you actually see that progression of, you know, is sick and then it just goes into the deterioration, just like you say.
Well, and it's nice too, because we don't have like 15 minutes of them slowly deteriorating. It's just like, you know what's coming. The characters even kind of know that there's something wrong, but you can't just jump to shoot them in the head.
Well, yeah, because you can see that they actually start losing the hair, because you still have not full-blown hair, not full-blown out hair. You have like these patches of gone, and then your skin looks like sick looking, and then you start having moments of like clarity versus not clarity. So yeah, like they said, don't spend 15 minutes, but then it's just by one image, you can tell so much.
Mm-hmm.
And in action movies, they don't take the time to do that. And this movie, they actually took the time.
Yeah.
And that's why I was a little bit more interested.
I think that's part of what works, is because it's still a horror movie first. There's a lot of action in the movie, but you can tell from their approach that we're going to make you uneasy. We're going to scare you. We're going to shoot guns and yell and blow stuff up too, but that's not the priority.
It was Bravo Team's helicopter. Nobody was in it. But strangely, most of the equipment was still there. However, we soon discovered why.
Hey! Come here!
Ah!
at this point, we start to get closer to the video game, where the STARS team is sent to the Arcady Mountains, to the Spencer Mansion, to investigate. Of course, there's zombies loose in the house, and so there's, you know, stuff going on there. And then meanwhile, Claire has been attacked at her house, and she runs off in a motorcycle, which connects to the video games, where she's looking for a brother, and she's riding into Raccoon City when things start happening for her. And then also, you've got the Leon S. Kennedy character, who's the rookie cop at the police station. Now, he has the least overblown circumstance. He's already at the police station. He sees that things are getting a little bit crazy, so he's the guy who's like locking things up and everything. Things that, you know, we have a like the iconic moment from the games where a semi smashes through town and starts a bunch of flyers, and you see the zombies start to uprise and stuff. You definitely start to see the games more in those sequences. And that's when you start getting more into the regular zombie mode too, where there's, you know, get your guns and start shooting stuff. Plot-wise, it's very close to both the first and the second games. And if anything, maybe they owe too much to it, and in trying to adapt two games simultaneously so that there's simultaneous action instead of one happening and another happening, they lose a lot of stuff. They lose some of the characters. It's weird because so much of it visually is faithful. So many of the iconic images, like the look at the police station, the look at the house, with the opening sequence from the game where they go into the house and one of the zombies is munching on somebody. And when they flash the light on it, it responds and starts coming after them. Lots of stuff from the games, but it's a little weird because the characters really aren't quite in line with the way they are in the games. The Claire Redfield character in the games is way more perky and more personable. And she you've told me in the past things that bothered you about the Japanese people while we were in Japan, that like just like that forced effervescence. And In the games, Claire's kind of like that, which is why I don't like the Redfields. And another thing that put me off the games was they kept focusing more and more on the brother and sister. And I like the other characters more. Jill Valentine was one of the people who was part of the STARS team. And she's played by Hannah John-Kamen, who you probably don't remember from the Ant-Man and Wasp movie. She was the ghost. She has an interesting feature. She has kind of deep sunk eyes and stuff. But neither one of us liked the Ant-Man movie. And so she gets to have a lot more personality in this movie. I would say that in terms of personality, her Jill Valentine is close to the games, but she's a little bit psycho in the show movie, where in the games, Jill's probably just a little sassy at most, but she's reasonably close to how she is in the games, but we don't get to see her very much. There's very little of her, and most of what she's doing is a connection to Albert Wesker, who's played by Tom Hopper, who looks so much like Michael Rosenbaum that I had to double check to make sure it wasn't him, but he's taller and more muscular. And Wesker, the games are infamous for bad acting, particularly the first game. In the first game, instead of the helicopter staying with them, the helicopter takes off, and there's a sequence where they're like, no, don't go. We're used to this Wesker guy being this really like smug, smarmy, you know, this guy's evil from jump, you know, he's the guy who's got sunglasses on at night, you know, so you know he's a creepo. Where the character is played here is a lot more sympathetic and more personable. Now I still think he's kind of a douchey jock bro type of what you were seeing when he was in the diner sequence, but he feels so much like a different character that I don't even recognize him as Wesker. Does it fit?
The thing too is that, to point it out that you didn't mention, is that whenever they were trying to send them out to see what was going on in the mansion, he had this pilot device,
yeah,
where it was like
a palm pilot. Yeah,
he got a beeper
to go to his locker, masses, where he found this unusual device. What is this palm pilot thing?
Yeah, oh, the bike. Well, like, you know, so it was all again 1998 kind of vibe. All the instructions are gonna be there, so we don't know what's going on with this pan pilot thing, but yeah, Apparently there is a lot of stuff in there,
yeah,
that he's, well, supposed to follow.
Yeah, and it helps him to, it, one of the things that was neat was one of the only times you see,
is that
the
from the game?
Yeah, when you see, okay, the not the palm pilot, but using the piano key sequence to trigger a secret room opening and stuff, that's right out of the game. So again, for people who play the games, there's so much nostalgia bait in this movie, it's unreal. But it's just so weird that the characters aren't quite right. And what the most egregious though is Ivan Gogia, or Gogia, as Leon S. Kennedy. So he was always floppy haired pretty boy in the games, but he was like, and he was, I guess he's a rookie cop in the games too, but I don't think he's a rookie in general. I think he was just a rookie to Raccoon City, but he was running around doing the, you know, shooting people in the head just like any other zombie game, and he was very capable. And in fact, he is not only my favorite of the Resident Evil game characters, but a lot of people's favorites. I think Mac's favorite as well. And so for him to be this completely comically inept sheriff duty guy, he's like, like David Arquette's character from the Scream movies. He's so completely incompetent and useless. And you pointed out he's the subject of one of your greatest peeves in motion pictures that occurs in this movie, The Walkman.
Oh, yeah. So they go into this scene, right? When all this stuff is going down, he's just at the front desk, right?
He's screwing up and getting mocked, basically.
He's the newbie. He's like, yeah, he's getting mocked.
Well, it's like the police chief calls everybody in for a meeting. So he goes to the meeting and he's specifically like, not you, Kennedy. Only the real cops. Some old lady might come in looking for a cat or something. You need to be at the front in case she shows up. The real cops are going to be back here, you know, getting our mission on. So,
yeah. Yeah, so he's there in the front desk, right? And he's...
And they made a point, too, mentioning that he'd only gotten on the police department because his dad was some muckety-muck at another major metropolitan police force. And also, apparently, he'd shot his partner in the ass accidentally. And that's how he ended up in Raccoon City.
I thought it was
the butt.
Oh, he did? Really? I thought it was the eye.
No, because that was supposed to be a comedy beat that didn't work out. Yeah. If he shot the guy in the eye, that would be kind of like fucked up. We're shooting him in the butt. It's
but
like,
that's what I thought, so. It's like, why are they making fun of that? That was kind of like rough.
I think you're maybe associating the eye with
that would be kind of traumatic with somebody shooting in the eye.
Yeah.
But anyhow, so he was there in the front desk, and then he's like, he's jamming, I guess, with his Walkman.
I think he's falling asleep, too. He's falling asleep on duty at the desk.
I don't know. So he's, you know, he's there with his Walkman with, like, the headphones. You know, before the headphones with the foam and everything. So 1998 is like, how big quality?
Very basic Walkman, yellow foam headphones.
Was it a Walkman or was it like a CD player?
It might have been a Sony Walkman, but it's still a Walkman, I'm sure.
I think it was like, because it's different between a Walkman. It was, I don't know.
Discman.
Discman. Yeah, there we go. So anyhow, so he's there. And then it was like this truck, of course, like the one that gave Claire a lift.
Literally, because what happened is the dog that had licked the blood had become infected by the zombie infection and bit his master. And now they're both zombies driving down the freeway.
Yeah, so this guy is shredding right straight to the station. And then it's just hit another car. And then there's this massive truck. I guess it's transporting gasoline. I don't know. They never say. But the truck hit it like right into the police station, like where you can see this guy from the door at the front desk with this headphones. Then you see this massive explosion because this, like, the huge truck just bumped into the front of the police station.
Yeah, it rolled and
this
slid.
This massive explosion, you know, and then this guy is still, like, falling asleep or doing something else with his headphones, for which I absolutely detest that they do that. What's up with them doing that scene in a lot of the movies? Is that even credible? Even with the top of the line right now, 21st century, top of the line
noise canceling
headphones,
whatever.
You can still hear shit. It's not like totally you're in total silent room, you know, like complete isolation. No, you can still, plus, yeah, those headphones were not even near of blocking the massive amount of shit that is going on outside. And I just hate when they do that. And then apparently what the chief just come out and say, hey, what are you doing? That's when he hears. So he hears that massive crash into the outside, into this massive explosion.
Well, actually what had happened is that the zombie truck driver had walked through the front door of the police station, was walking directly toward Kennedy. Kennedy still is asleep and or listening to his music. And then the police chief shot the zombie.
That's what it was.
And that's when there's enough noise finally.
So a shot. Yeah. Actually.
Well, don't get me wrong. A gunshot.
It is strong, but not fucking strong hitting on top of the building in a massive explosion of a tank full of gasoline.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. And just point out to you, the chief is played by Donald Logue, who, how old do you think that police chief is?
Oh, he's the one who was in that TV show that I like. What was that TV show?
I don't remember the name, but I know which one you're talking about. It was on Fox.
Yeah, with the dad and my mom, Sylvia, and like they had like the girl when they were not still pregnant, married, and what was the name of that show?
I'm going to IMDb.
Yeah. I used to like that show a lot. They didn't have Grounded for Life.
91 episodes it lasted.
Yeah. So I recognized the guy immediately. He was pretty much playing the same character, except more
he mostly plays the same character. He was the same guy in Blade. He was the same guy in Gotham.
He was really annoying to me, really, in that movie.
He definitely went big, and I think under the circumstances it made sense for him to do that. But how old do you think that guy is based on what he looked in this movie?
I'll say he's like 50, 55.
He's 55, but I think he looked way older in this movie. This is a guy, he's walking around with a mustache, and I think he's playing older, which probably helps.
I don't think
But he needs he he's got a required beard. He needs to grow his beard back, because him with the mustache, he just looks way too fucking old to be 55. Maybe by 55 in the 1970s or the 1950s, but by modern standards, he looks way too old to just be 55 years old.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I kind of figured more or less that that was going to be the age because of that show. And he kind of looked like around mid-50s, I guess. But yeah. So anyhow, continue.
Again, you also have the adaptation of the second game. So you've got them running around the police station, but not as much as you would think. And that's where ultimately Claire Redfield ends up. And that's how you came out, Claire, with Leon. That, you know, there's some stuff that goes on in the jail cells and stuff, but you really don't get a lot of the material from the second game, which is unfortunate. You do see the return of the Doberman, of course, because we have to visit some of the Dobermans. But ultimately, they all end up at the house, and you end up with them, you know, dealing with all the weird underground umbrella bullshit and William Birkin and flashbacks and yada yada. Definitely go more into action mode, although there's still some horror moments in there. And coming up to the resolution, which would be familiar to anybody who played the games, and yes, involves a train. That's required.
Check.
Yeah. And then you get to the very end where you get a nice big hero walk. And then finally, there's a mid-credit sequence that sets up some sequels. And also, it features a key character from the Resident Evil 2 game that does not have a significant role in the movie. I forgot to mention, too, I think that the Avon Jogia actor is solid. You know, I think he does a good job of playing the character that's written for this movie. I just don't care for his rendition of Leon Kennedy. And one would hope that if they were to do any sequels, that he would have more to do. I think that it worked okay to do race swap, because they race swap Jill and they race swap Leon. And I think it was smart because the Redfields are so innately white bread that it wouldn't have worked to try to cast them with another race. And you want to have more variety, especially when you've got all these different characters that are like lead characters in games. You want to make sure that they're not just all played by a bunch of white people. So I think they did a good job with the choosing who they were going to race swap with. And the characters that were race swapped were, you know, I like them well enough. What really got me though is I think that Kaia Scodelario, I like her so much better than the character of Claire Redfield. I think she did the best job of all the actors, where she could do the toughness, but she could also do the fear to some degree. She also, because of her dealings with Umbrella in the past, she gets to do a lot of those key things games. Like for you, how did you feel when you saw her turn on the movie projector and you're watching that? Besides getting some sinister flashbacks, probably.
No, the thing to
was
me...
Was it weird for you? Did it take you out of any movie or anything? Or did
No, it was okay. It's just that to me, I was thinking about it. It's like, well, I guess there's electricity. So it just happens to be connected like for so many years. And if it's connected for so many years, it has just worked just like that. Probably it was being, what, like 40 years? 40, 60 years? Mm-hmm. And nobody has maintained this thing. They have a lot of moving parts. And that was kind of what the VHS chat room kind of took me out of it. And I was more concentrated. It's like, how will that shit work after 60 years of just being standing there? And it's just
Well, that's just it, though. I think that was still operational. I think that everything was still active at that point. It wasn't like it'd been forgotten all those years. I think that the doctor's down there regularly, you know.
Okay.
So, celluloid is not exactly notorious for its stability. Mm-hmm. That's why we have all these fires involving celluloid. One thing that is peculiar to me, especially as I'm looking at the IMDb page, is you've got all these zombies, but they cast like almost uniformly attractive people, you know, whether or not they're playing zombies. So there's definitely a weird amount of eye candy. And, for me, Claire Redfield was my type, Jill Valentine was my type. So the loss Mila wasn't as profoundly felt as a result of them casting hotness. And I think you probably like Leon. He seemed like he'd be more your type, the actor playing Leon. No. Not the character, but the actor.
No. I did not like any attractive? Of the male characters.
Sorry.
Well, except maybe the newbie guy.
That's what I'm talking about, Leon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was okay, but then he was playing the dumb.
You're right. That didn't help.
I was kind of like turned down by that.
Yeah.
So.
And it didn't help, too, that they made sure to race swap the two characters they also gave way less screen time to. So, you know, it's like that was a little...
And then at the end, you know, the Leon guy started to be more like, you know, doing cool stuff.
Not completely useless and pathetic.
Yeah,
and
but at that
saved
point,
by everybody.
I was already like, okay, well, you started into the action part of it. So now you're the dumb, and now you're this action jock. It's like, I don't care.
Right.
So yeah, so pretty much.
I mean, he managed to work one device successfully. Overall, when we were driving home, you said that you actually were surprised that you, relatively speaking, enjoyed the movie.
I went to expectations of me falling asleep. Like, pretty much don't remember any of the movie. Like, I didn't remember any of the whichever we went to see into the movie theater. That was my expectation. Was below the ground, I was gonna fall asleep or just eat the popcorn. I didn't care, and I actually was aware of the whole movie. I there were some parts, like I said, that I did like a lot, that it wasn't full-blown action macho, you know, hot chicks running out like with this boobs pull, you know, just like the other Resident Evil. It was more slow. Plus, the movie was an hour and 40 minutes or something like that.
147.
And they still managed to cramp all that slow pacing, evolving scenes that I really like, plus some of the actions, plus some of the story. So I think that they did a pretty good job pulling it together. And I'm not saying that it's going to be my favorite movie or it's like, I really like it a lot. But based on my expectations of not pretty much going to be negative numbers, I would say it was pretty decent. It kept me entertained. And because I didn't know absolutely nothing about the actual story of Resident Evil. And finally, when we were driving home, I asked you, it's like, is this like a time frame? Or, and then you finally told me, well, it seems that it's a reboot. So I'm like, oh.
Yeah, because at first I kind of thought, well, maybe it's a prequel to the other movies. But because Raccoon City and Elements of Umbrella are so fundamentally different in a fairly short time frame, considering that the movies were in 2002. So within 5 years, Raccoon City would not have turned into what it is in those movies. So it's clear that they're not related to one another. And obviously, worth noting too, is a number of the characters that are in this movie do pop up in the W.S. Anderson movies, but they're not the same actors, obviously. And there's not a lot of fidelity. I mean, people who like the movies don't necessarily like the games, and people who like the games don't necessarily like the movies, because a lot of the game people really felt like they got too far away from the games, and by the end in no way resembled the games. So the expectation was that by being truer to the games, they were going to serve that audience better. And apparently it served a more horror-oriented audience better too, as opposed to the action people that watched the other movies.
But it's like I say, it did have a lot of everything in a very good proportion. I will say that a lot of times when the movie goes into the final, like all the Marvel movies, that you have the final battle at the end.
Big boss level battle.
Yeah. That time I'm already checked out, because it's like, I don't care. Mm-hmm. I just care about everything that happens up to that point. Mm-hmm. And with this one, it's pretty much happened the same thing. Like, you know, the last, I guess, monster. But everything else was a nice pace, a nice movie, and didn't felt like it was fucking 3 hours long. It was a very nice, short movie.
It's so nice to see a movie like this under 2 hours.
Oh, yes. Especially when they, and I thought that was really bold for taking their time to just develop that walk to the house, or to see that woman on the door, or that kid, or just little moments that they actually drag it out in time for you to feel something in a hour and 40 minutes. I thought they were going to be just action-packed, run, don't care about the dialogue, don't care about what phase you're doing, as long as you go, come on, dude, oh, yeah, you know, like all fucking action movies and bang-bang and bing-bing, for which that's what I was clearly surprised, that they actually took the time. They have enough horror that I got scared a couple times. They had enough action for me to get bored a little bit. They have history. They have like those nice moments of me being like, huh, this is just pretty neat. So yeah, they have well-packed everything in an hour and 40 minutes.
Yeah, see, the original Resident Evil was supposed to be directed by George Romero, who definitely had zombie movie bona fides, but also probably wouldn't have given them the movie they wanted, which is why they went a different way. So when they hired Paul W.S. Anderson, I think they were doing that on the strength of his movie Event Horizon, which was a pretty solid horror movie. But it also was an outlier, because mostly what he's known for is action movies. Even the horror, quote unquote, Resident Evil series is an action franchise. Where I think one thing they did smartly was they got Johan Roberts to do this movie, and he is known pretty much exclusively for horror. He did the two 47 Meters Down shark movies. He did the Stranger sequel, Prey at Night. He's done pretty much nothing but horror movies. And I think that shows. I think he recognizes that horror is about mood. Horror is about taking your time. You can't rush it. And that goes well here. Yeah.
Because not jump horrors, like, you know, the It's and a lot of the horror movies that they try to boo. Yeah. No, it like takes time to you to actually feel those shields.
And for me, going into this movie, there was an element of getting it over with, is that I assumed that I was going to see the movie, and I didn't want anything spoiled for me. And while I didn't have very high expectations, especially not knowing pretty much anybody in the cast, I didn't expect much from this one either. But I also knew that it was going to nag at me if I didn't see the movie within a timely fashion. It was just going to keep bugging me. Mm-hmm. And because I'd already quote unquote wasted a whole day doing running around and shopping and stuff, I figured, well, you know, I've already lost this day anyway, so let me go ahead and get this movie out of the way. And being that it's a horror movie, maybe watching it late at night will be helpful. And I do think it was. I was much more pleased with this movie than I thought I was going to be. I was much happier with it. I still prefer the better movies of the previous series.
Mila.
But yeah, I was entertained. I did appreciate all the nostalgic nods, the music cues. I did have decent action when it was
overdoing
action.
Overdoing it.
Right. They, yeah, exactly.
exactly.
I would definitely put it probably somewhere in the middle of the previous series in terms of my liking as a fan of that material. But for somebody who has a fetishistic appreciation for the early Resident Evil games, if you grew up playing those games and you were disappointed that you didn't get the movie you thought you were going to back in the 2000s, it's here now. And unfortunately, people are staying away from this movie in droves. It looks like it's going to be the number 5 movie at the extended week holiday box office. It's getting beaten by The Eternals in its 4th weekend, I think, if I remember correctly. So it's not doing well at all, and almost certainly will be the biggest commercial failure of the Resident Evil series. And I do think part of it is that the zombie zeitgeist has definitely left at this point. Partly is that the people...
Oh, wow, 25% in Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, well, none of the Resident Evil movies do well in Rotten Tomatoes, though.
No, but this is not a 25. I'm sorry.
No, it's better than
that. A lot of the Marvel movies are way worse than this movie. And the fucking Marvel movies get like 90% Rotten Tomatoes, for which a fucking bias thing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is not a 25 Rotten Tomatoes. I think people are just trying to, I don't know, they're kind of saying like, oh, this is not like the original Resident Evils. They don't have like chicks running with boobs like up and down and all the bang bangs, you know. I don't know what's the deal.
I don't understand why the critics are quite so rough on this one.
Because I read why the critics says that, seriously.
Mostly they find it inert. They just found it boring. People didn't like it. I like it. I think if you like the material, you should definitely check it out. And given that I'm a fan of the film series and that it's the 25th anniversary of the games here in the States, next year is the 20th anniversary of the Paul W.S. Anderson films. I like the idea of kicking those off because I plan on covering those next year. Go ahead and kicking that off with a little prelude and prequel this year and then going into those next year. And I'm happy to go into those on a positive note, having enjoyed the movie.
Yeah.
And I'm glad you liked it too. I'm surprised you liked it too. Yeah.
I'm not going to say that I loved it, but I enjoyed it. And like I say, I enjoyed it way better than I enjoyed it the latest Marvel movie.
Yeah. I'm not seeing House of Gucci. I'm not the audience. I have not seen Eternals. I'll see it when it's free on streaming. I'm hoping to be surprised by that, but I'm not having high expectations of that movie. I think that of all the movies that were out at this moment, this was the movie that I most ought to have seen. And I'm glad that's the one I did go see.
Yeah. Yes, very much. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks go out to Adam Blackmoon, Alan Middleton, Dr. Ange, Canoe, Chris's Backbook for Beginners, Chris Dunford, Chris Lydon, Comic 42, Dave's Comic Heroes Blog, Dear Watches, a Marvel What If podcast, Del Dracula, Doc Strange, Eater of Taki, Ed Moore, Gregory Litfield, The Hammer Strikes, Geeky Stuff and Voiceover, History of Comics on Film, Iowa's Joe is Totally 80s, It's Plastic Man, Jeffrey Brown, They Them, Jenna Reagan, Keith G. Baker, King Dinosaur, Lucretia, Max Reed's Comic, Mike at Send Aliens to Me, P, Photo Druid, Dusseldorf, Randy Caldwell, Resurrections, Warlock and Thanos Podcast, Samilla, Scott Eck, Tim Price, The Pod Crasher, and Wayne Burroughs, with Randy Caldwell sending us a picture of King Shark holding some Sudafed as reference to Max sinuses and my own. And Mike also asked, 2019, whatever happened in 2019? And a whole bunch of people gave him like for that, and I didn't tag any of them here.
I thought it was ISIS.